you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour, and thank you for listening to the Twilight Histories on our 10th anniversary. 10 years ago, when I first started this show with Ice Age Misery, I created a character for you, someone whose eyes you got to explore the world through. I envisioned you as a young, naive student, curious about the world, but physically small and weak, and unfit to handle the challenges of life in the multiverse. Yet, somehow, your character kept surviving. Well, 10 years later, that character has evolved from a tender youth to a 100-year-old Twilight Histories agent who has experienced battles, murders, torture, and even crucifixion. I feel it's time to let that character go, so we can explore new characters together. At least the ones that I write. So, on this 10th anniversary of the Twilight Histories, I give you Blue Dragons, the conclusion of a decade of world-splitting adventures, and the final bow for that original student character. Blue Dragons is by far the most ambitious story I've written, and not just because it's long. I also put a great amount of thought into it and created a world that was at once extremely different from our own, while also being deep and rich in its world-building. I wanted to see how far I could push my own imagination and see if I could break a few glass ceilings. I also reintroduced some old favorite characters from our show to wrap up loose ends. If you're a new listener to the Twilight Histories, I think you'll enjoy Blue Dragons, but you'll enjoy it more if you've heard the other stories, especially some of those earlier shows I created, like Ice Age Misery and The Winged Victory. Blue Dragons is full of Easter eggs from old favorite shows. Please join me in our Patreon community. I'm building a new multi-part series inspired by Dungeons & Dragons. It's going to be open world, and the character will be controlled by our patrons. I don't know what will happen. I don't know what our patrons will decide. It's up to them. They have now decided on a character. It's a Turkish bow-wielding Janissary. You will be entering a medieval labyrinth created by an evil duchess. It's going to be a lot of fun, and you can help guide the story and hear it long before we launch it to the public by joining us on Patreon. We'll get Blue Dragon started in just a minute, I promise. But first, I want to recommend a podcast to you. The History of Egypt by Dominic Perry.
Twilight Histories brings you the stories of worlds that never were. It is a great way to speculate, imagine, and conceive of different timelines and histories. In our own world, there are many societies that have seemingly vanished. One of these is ancient Egypt. Hi, I'm Dominic Perry from the History of Egypt podcast. Every week, I take listeners deep into the society, events, and stories of a great civilization. From the peaks of the pyramids to the chambers of forgotten tombs, from the hidden sanctums of great temples to the kitchens of tiny homes. The History of Egypt podcast explores every aspect of ancient life. It is a massive but fascinating tale. You can find the show on all good podcasting platforms, and the website is EgyptianHistoryPodcast.com. Thanks for listening. Now, enjoy some Twilight Histories.
That was The History of Egypt by Dominic Perry. Go check it out and make sure you subscribe. And now, on to today's show, Blue Dragons Part 1, by myself, Jordan Harbour.
I'm glad to see you're back. That was quite the extended vacation you had. Don't worry, we understand.
You've been hitting the pad hard and run up a lot of splits. A lot of splits. You deserve a break. Rumor has it you spent your vacation out in Texas? Red Star Transport, was it? Listen, we have a rule here, and it's in your contract. You work for us now. You can't have any contact with our competition. I know what you're thinking. There's more money if you go over to one of the big companies like Red Star. The Twilight Histories is just a little startup. We rely on tourists and academics, while the big guys like Red Star get huge government contracts and supply and build colonies on other planets. Now, I know you're thinking it. I'm not going to try to sell you on the adventures of splitting worlds, or that it's better to live your passion than to make money. We both know that's garbage. But I will tell you something you might not know. Things are changing. Fast. Red Star jumped space, and we're world splitters. It may seem like a completely different business, but it won't be for long. World splitting is a disruptive technology. It's an existential threat to Red Star's entire business model, and in fact, the entire colonial network. This can't get out, but we have reason to believe that Red Star and the Transport Alliance was behind our little terrorist attack back when you were on Gliese. Yeah, sure, it was terrorists, but why us? They didn't have a reason to bomb us. Red Star and their buddies did. Connect the dots. Ever wonder why we send drones to so many worlds before picking one and sending in an agent? Do you see how small our particle accelerator is compared to Red Star's? Did you ever wonder why we can work with such a scrappy power supply? It takes a lot more energy to bend space than it does to puncture a hole through it. I mean, a lot more. It's about 100 times more expensive for Red Star to send you to Alpha Centauri than it is for Twilight Histories to simply puncture a hole to a different version of Earth. Now think about that. We can do 100 splits with the same amount of energy as it takes Red Star to get to the nearest extrasolar colony. And that's just the nearest. They sometimes send scientific probes out to the far ends of the galaxy, and that requires 100,000 or even 1,000,000 times more energy than it takes to do a split. Any split. They're all the same. One split isn't more energy intensive than any other. Doesn't matter how exotic the world is we send you to. It's the same amount of energy. Why is that disruptive? Why does that threaten Red Star Transport and, well, the Transport Alliance? Why would this threaten the entire colonial network? Think about it. Let's say you are a mining company. That's most of Red Star's customers, miners. What's more cost-effective, mining some distant space rock where you need life support? Or split worlds and mine a pristine version of the Earth, oxygen included? And hey, they don't even need to explore. They already know where the big resources are. They could mine the same exact gold vein 1,000 times, 100,000 times, on different versions of Earth. And they could even mine them all at the same time, no permit required. It's absolutely unlimited. The only limit is labor. There's plenty of that in other worlds. Imagine taking all the builders of the pyramids in some other world and putting them to work digging up gold. Think of the money. Well, that's what the mining companies are thinking about. They don't care where the gold is. All they care about is how much it costs to mine. And what we offer is cheap. You can bet Red Star is shaking in their boots. And why can't any of the big guys beat us at our own game and split worlds, you ask? It's simple. It would destroy them. They'd go bankrupt. Think of all that infrastructure they've invested in. They built the entire colonial network. It spans thousands of planets. It took them 200 years to build the whole thing. You think they can just turn it off? Now, I shouldn't be telling you this, but we want you to stay here. You've done a lot of splits. You did a great job on your trial run. We want you, but we're worried you're going to be drawn into the better pay over at Red Star. That's why I'm telling you, if you stay here at the Twilight Histories, you're going to be part of something really special. This is the leading edge, right here. This is the next big leap forward. We've already got a mining company interested. We're putting our feelers out for more. I'm telling you, things are about to really heat up at the Twilight Histories, and the money is coming. Once we start getting miners and building colonies, we're going to need people like you more than ever. And there will be a lot more money for you, I promise. Does that all make sense? At any rate, we should probably get on with your orientation. We have a special assignment for you today. As you probably know, the Colonial Network has been talking a lot about terraforming Venus lately. Venus is close, so it's less expensive to get to, right? There are a lot of resources on Venus. It would be a good world to colonize, if it were terraformed. Foolish, but hey, it's their money. What you might not know is that the Colonial Network is looking for vendors. They actually want to do this crazy scheme. One of these vendors has come to us. They're putting together a presentation for the Colonial Network. To get an edge over the competition, they had the brilliant idea of splitting worlds, finding a civilization that's already terraformed Venus, and then build their presentation around that. Terraforming Venus will probably be extremely expensive, and it will take an extremely long time. Our client tells us it could take 500 years just to cool the planet down enough so that metals don't melt on the surface. If that gives you an idea, add another 500 years to get the oxygen levels just right, and another 500 years to get the planet lush and green. The whole project seems mad to us, of course. Why not just split to another version of Earth? But hey, what do we know? The client needs evidence. They want to see the results. They want to show the Colonial Network all the challenges and offer them a solution that's proven to work. And because this project is so high profile, they're willing to pay top dollar for this split. You may be wondering why we've put you on this assignment and not one of our more experienced agents. The truth is, this job is time sensitive and our agents are on missions. You did a great job in your Black Scourge world, and we're going to move you along into some higher profile work. You're going to get paid more for this one too. Before we bring in the client, let me give you a quick rundown of the mission. We sent drones out to a number of prospective worlds. Instead of pointing the cameras down, we pointed them up. As in, up towards space. The cameras weren't powerful enough to capture good images of Venus's surface, but through some analysis, we were able to tell something about the atmospheres of the different worlds. Here, take a look at these images. These six are from missions that come back negative. That yellow dot is Venus. Now, look at this one. See how it looks bluish-green? It's kind of like Earth, right? Our client tells us that's evidence of terraforming. So we believe we have the right world. The problem will be getting you to Venus. We can get you to Earth easily enough. We just punch you through. But with this ancient Swiss accelerator, we simply don't have the payload to get you off-planet. We can't bend space. We could do it from our Chinese accelerator in Urumqi, but not from this one. So we're going to punch you through to Earth, and then you're going to have to get your client to Venus somehow. And back. How? We assume that Venus is terraformed. There must be an advanced civilization that did the terraforming. They should have a way of traveling between the planets. Money? Clothes? We don't have the intel. We don't know anything about this world except that Venus looks terraformed. We've given you a basic survival kit, standard issue military grade. Your pack is over there. Ah, and here's our client, April Reinhardt. It's so nice to see you. I'd like to introduce you to your agent. And let me put your fears at ease. You are in very capable hands. This is one of our top agents with extensive experience in this type of work. Well, it sounds like the accelerator is powered up and ready to go. Now, please, Miss Reinhardt, step on the platform, both of you please, and we'll get you on your way. Miss Reinhardt, you're going to feel a bit dizzy, and you might not remember where you are at first. Don't worry, your agent will guide you through this. Very soon, you'll be on Venus. Terraformed Venus. Thank you. You wake, disoriented, your head swirling, half in a dream, half awake. It's baking hot and the humidity is off the charts. The world comes into focus faster than usual. You're in some kind of jungle. There are chirps and buzzing sounds. Foliage is thick around you, and the canopy is high above, casting dark, twisted shadows that churn and morph the jungle so it looks like some giant living creature. You slap your face, trying to get a grip over yourself. You're lying on your back. You try to rise to your feet, but you're too heavy. No, you think as the cortisol races through your body. Is this the right planet? The gravity, it's so heavy. As you roll on your side, you realize it's just your backpack, the one you were given back at the Twilight Histories. Everything is still so hazy. Your client, where is she? You leap up and look around. The foliage is too dense to see beyond a few feet. What was her name? You can't remember. Hey, Venus Lady, you say. Only the insects respond. Hopefully she made it. Hopefully she's not far. You've never done a split with another person before, so you really have no idea how this works. Hopefully she didn't split to the other side of the planet. Venus Lady, you say again, cupping your hands this time. Time to move. Ever-expanding concentric circle should do it. What should you use for a marker? You take off your backpack. It's made of a camouflage pattern. No good. You need something bright. You open your pack and rifle through it. Freeze-dried food, water, a gun. That might come in handy. Small pup tent. There's a metallic glint at the bottom of the pack. Tiny folded blankets. Perfect. You pull one out, unfold it, and tie one end to a vine. Then hoist it up. There's your marker. Now all you have to do is keep it in view over your right shoulder as you move around in circles. Hey, Venus Lady, I'm coming, you say, and begin your search. It's like crawling through a hedgerow. A machete would have been helpful. But a knife. Now, there's one on your belt. You pull it out. It's a mean-looking thing, meant for gutting enemy soldiers. You hack away the vines. The thing's sharp. And even so, this will be slow going. Help! Comes a woman's voice. Oh, thank goodness. Where are you? You say. I'm stuck, she says, and crashed through the jungle, following the direction of her voice. There she is, stuck in a tree. How'd you get up there? You say. Night came fast. You cleared an area, set up your tent, and you now have a small fire going. The Venus Lady, who reintroduced herself as April Reinhardt, is sitting by it, one of the thin metallic blankets over her legs. The night air has cooled. April looks like a mix of Asian and Northern European, so she's probably born into money. She has a kind of Singapore look about her. You place a small pot of water over a fire. What's that for? She says. Boiling water, you say. What for? To drink. Didn't they give you a filter or iodine tablets? You shrug. Actually, I aren't sure. Well, can you check? She says. I'm beginning to wish you hadn't found her up in that tree. You rummage through your pack and find what looks like a small, compact hand pump. That's it, she says, jumping to her feet and taking it from you. She pulls a water bottle out of the pack and walks to the edge of the clearing to a small creek. Strong woman. Probably used to bossing around her servants. Well, never mind. You can use the pot of boiling water for cooking. You find a pack of some freeze-dried powder. It says ginger-fried beef on the side. You'll definitely need to find something better to eat than this. Powder is just not appetizing. Hey, where are you from, anyways? You say. Jakarta. You've been doing this long? What? Splitting worlds? No. Playing the tour guide. Nope. You're my first. Figured. Well, I have been splitting worlds a while, you say. There's no sense pushing the point. She's got you labeled. You change the subject. How did you know about water filters? You into camping? There's a long pause. It's just long enough to get awkward. I'm a bioengineer. A bioengineer? And you camp. So, they've got you trying to figure out how to terraform a planet. If it's all the same, I really don't feel like small talk right now. Can I ask why you feel that way? No, you can't. It's going to be a long few years. We might as well talk. Let's just get one thing straight. I'm doing a job. You're the hired help. So, let's keep it simple, okay? I see. I guess the small talk's over. Water starts to boil, and you pour the ginger beef powder into the pot. I don't like this. I don't trust this. The Twilight History's as sketchy as hell. It's a rusted old dump. And as for the help, I get you? Complete novice? What are you, 20? Oh, over 100, I think. That throws her off balance. Smells good. You hungry? You hack your way through the jungle as best you can with your knife. It's slow going. April treats you like a common servant. Maybe not a common servant. Now that she knows you're a centenarian, she mistrusts you for entirely different reasons, though you're not sure why. Maybe it has to do with your appearance not matching your skin. It could be she can't rely on her senses to tell her who or what you are. That's a fairly common reaction. But she does seem to understand the wilderness better than you, and that is more frustrating than anything. You're supposed to be the guide. She communicates her dissatisfaction more through huffs and ticks than words. You learn she's got some experience identifying plants and animals, and she knows the Latin. But she has a tough time identifying what you're seeing in the jungle. Everything seems to be related to modern species. Though she can't say how. Past? Future? It's unclear. But what's certain is that you are not in the 24th century anymore. Around noon, you find a structure rising about 10 feet from the ground and about 50 feet wide. It's covered in vines. When you pull these away, you discover stone masonry underneath. Well, would you look at that, you say. What is it? I don't know, but it looks old. At least we can check off that humans live here, you say with a chuckle. I wouldn't check that off your list just yet. What do you mean? You say, pulling off a large clump of vines to reveal more of the huge blocks of stone masonry beneath, all finely carved and fitted. The plants, remember? Yeah, what about them? They're not from our time. I wouldn't worry too much about that. All these worlds are different, but this is definitely built by human hands. I don't think you get what I'm saying. These plant species we're seeing, they're not slightly different. They're about 50 million years different. 50 million? Well, how do you explain this stone monument? She doesn't answer, but walks around as though searching for something. Over here, she says. What is it? Cut away those vines. Yes, my lady. You start to saw at the vines with the serrated part of your knife. No, no, just pull them. You take that end, and I'll take these. You pull the vines apart as though drawing curtains. Behind them is a stone stairwell leading into the darkness. How did you find that? I felt a draft. She opens your pack and pulls out a flashlight. She hands it to you. Go ahead, she says. Yes, my lady. Stop calling me that. Yes, my... She cuffs you on the back of the head. Okay, so it's a little immature for a centenarian, but... You have to have a little fun sometimes. You grin at April, turn the flashlight, and walk down the stairs. The walls are covered in carvings, shadows cast from your torch. You see the outlines of animals carved into the walls in tight, clean, geometric shapes. They look very unnatural in this wild jungle environment, mathematical, almost as though the creators of this art were trying to differentiate themselves from the chaos of the jungle. The patterns almost remind you of medieval Islamic art in their fine detail, pattern, and precision. What are these animals, do you think? I don't know. Some kind of prosimian is my guess. Look at the large eyes. What's a prosimian? It's like a small monkey creature from Madagascar, but these aren't prosimians. Their bodies are long, almost rat-like. Madagascar, eh? Looks like you solved the mystery of where we are. Maybe. Maybe not. At least we know the general vicinity we're in, right? Who do you think built this thing? They did. What do you mean, they did? The prosimian rat creatures? Yes. Look, she says, and grabs the flashlight from you. She points it at a section of the wall. Sure enough, the little wide-eyed rat monkeys are shown carving stone blocks and pulling them into place with what must be ropes and vines. You whistle through your teeth. 50 million years, you said. Sure, 50 million. We still don't know if it's in our past or future. What do you think? Past, I'd guess. What makes you think that? Because earlier mammals looked like rats and eventually branched out. The chances of mammals de-evolving in a similar way seems unlikely. Ah, good deduction. And what do you think these little guys eat? Insects. Wild cats? No, I said insects. If they're related to prosimians, then they're nocturnal and hunt insects at night. You take the flashlight back from her and shine it at a group of creatures roasting a cat over a fire. Looks like they found a taste for meat. The stairs lead down into a courtyard as dense with foliage as the jungle beyond. Whatever command the creatures had over nature has been lost. It appears the structure acted as a wall for this open courtyard, though you're still not sure of its function. There's a depression in the center, and you can make out more steps covered in thick vines and roots. In the center is a round hole carved in stone about 6 feet wide. You look down. It's dark, and you can't see the bottom. You pick up a pebble and drop it in. You count to three before hearing a plop as it lands in water. Come over here, April says. There's a fruit tree. Fruit, eh? Nice find. You climb over the foliage to her. Sure enough, there's an old, gnarled tree full of what looks like ripe fruit, though you've never seen anything like it before. Go up and get some, she says. What? The lady can't climb trees? I thought she was a camper. She puts her hands on her hips and scowls. Never mind, you say with a smile. Your wish is my command. The climb is easy. There are thick vines snaking up the tree, making for good handholds. And the tree is fairly short anyways, stunted by the lack of soil, its root system straining to upturn paving stones to access the nutrients beneath. You pick a fist-sized piece of fruit. It makes a satisfying snapping sound when you pull it from the branch, like a strawberry when it's perfectly ripe. The fruit looks a bit like a mango, but has a purplish tinge. You peel back the skin. The yellow flesh beneath drips with dew. You sink your nose into it and inhale deeply. It smells of sugar and honeysuckle and wells up memories of summer markets. You take a bite. The medley of passion fruit, mango, and watermelon washes over your tongue. The juice runs down your lips and hands, running rivulets all the way down to your elbows. You lick your sticky arm, throw your head back, and moan in ecstasy. A little theater for April. You pig! What am I paying you for? Pass those down right now. Hold on. I have to find a good one, you say. Oh, yes. This one's perfect. Ooh. Oh, it's ripe. Oh, I can't help it. I'm sorry, you say, and pretend to eat it. Pig, she says. She's trembling with anger. You reveal the fruit unscathed. Catch, you say, and toss it down to her. She misses and scrambles in the roots for it. Don't worry, I'll bring you a bunch down. Just throw them in the blanket, you pig, she says, and motions behind her. It appears she's been at work, tying the blanket up by its four corners, so it acts like a kind of trampoline. Smart lady. You feel a little bad for teasing her, but not too bad. A family of monkey-like creatures jumps out of the trees and sits on the stone walls. They look at you. Your heart stops. Is it them? The creatures that built this place? The ones that killed the cat? No, they don't have large eyes. And besides, this place has long been abandoned. These are just regular old, well, whatever they are. One of them makes eye contact with you. It opens its mouth to reveal a row of sharp teeth. I think they're after the fruit, April says. Yeah, no kidding. I'm coming down. It only takes a few seconds to shimmy down the tree. You grab your pack and open it. The gun. You rummage around, find it, and pull it out. Just in case. But where are the creatures? They're gone. April screams. You turn just in time to see a mouth full of deadly sharp teeth rushing towards your face. No time to fire the gun. You duck. The creature tumbles, but recovers with lightning reflexes. It's just enough time for you to raise the gun, trip the safety, and fire. The gun kicks with a loud thunk, and the projectile whizzes out. It explodes in the creature's chest with a huge blast of fireworks. The boom throws you and April instinctively to the ground. The fruit tree and the stone walls and the jungle flash with red strobes. You turn to see the damage. The creature is lying on the ground, its chest a bloody mess, still burning with red phosphorus. Exploding projectiles are dancing around the courtyard, burning and spewing red smoke. I guess it was a flare gun, you say. Do you see the creatures? April says. You look around the top of the walls. Over there, you say. The family, or hunting party, or whatever it is already beyond the walls, leaping through the trees at full speed. Do you think these things are intelligent? You say. You follow April over the vines to the dead creature. I doubt it, she says. No clothes, no tools. Then again, I have to admire this creature. Why? It was looking after its people, taking care of business. She's jabbing you. Hey, come on now. I killed the thing for you. You saved your own skin. April didn't talk to you all night and wouldn't even look at you over breakfast. Even as you began your hike through the jungle, she still wouldn't talk to you. At first, you were fine to give her space, but the chill in the air has grown tiresome. Look, I'm sorry, you say. What are you sorry about? She says, not turning back to you. I'm sorry for teasing you with the fruit, and for just generally joking around. You aren't being professional. I know, you're right. I made it very clear at the start. This is an important job. It's a job, and it's a high-profile one. We're talking about terraforming a planet. I need to get this right. And I need you to start acting your age. You're 100, right? I don't know, maybe. Well, start acting like it. And start acting like the professional my company paid for. You want to keep your job, don't you? You don't answer. Now she's getting under your skin. The Twilight Histories asked me to give a full review of your performance once we get back. What kind of review do you think you deserve? You close your eyes, swallowing your pride. You aren't sure if she's lying about the review. Even if she was telling the truth, would the Twilight Histories do anything about it? They might stick you on discovery missions, and then you'd miss out on the more lucrative clients. They hinted at mining companies. There's apparently a lot of money leading those types of things. No, you can't screw this up. It's not worth it. You'll just have to swallow your pride and do what she says. You're right, Miss Reinhardt. Good, she says. Now how about filling our water bottles? I feel like we've been walking in circles, she says, while poking the fire with a stick. It's been 3 days since you stepped on the platform back at the Twilight Histories. Your clothes are filthy, caked in sweat and rips. You're tired. It's tough pushing through an impenetrable jungle in humidity that rises to the absurd. You probably only traveled a few kilometers each day, though each day feels like a full marathon. You have any idea where we are? April says. I'm too tired for this, you say. Well, it's important. I'm beginning to doubt your company sent us to the right place. I thought this was supposed to be some sort of ultra-futuristic world. I've been having the same doubts, though you don't want to let on. The Twilight Histories has made mistakes before, and the temporary Swiss facility is a pile of junk compared to the one in Urumqi, and that was certainly a pile of junk. The Swiss one is all rust. There isn't even an attempt at wall paneling. It must be a couple hundred years old. You're amazed it works at all. Well, do you have anything to say? I don't know. We'll just have to keep going. Find a high point and have a look around. You pick up your own stick and poke the fire. If the Twilight History sent you to the wrong place, you'll be wandering the jungle with this miserable woman for years. What a nightmare. If she's bitter now, how bitter will she be after years of seething disappointment? No, it's best not to think that way. You'll go on the assumption that the Twilight History sent you to the right place, and you'll treat the client with decorum, as much as you can muster. So, we just keep looking for high ground? Yeah, we'll find something. And what if we don't find anything? We'll cross that bridge when it comes. We can't base our decisions on information we don't have yet. That's what we're trying to do, gather information, orient ourselves. From there, we can make more informed decisions. True, she says. What might be the first positive word she said to you? But we should still plan for different outcomes. Which outcomes? There's an infinite number of outcomes, just as there's an infinite number of universes. What if we find the Prosimian rats? How do we communicate with them? How do we get to Venus? Why do you think the Prosimian rats are the ones who did that? Their temple was a ruin. Looks to me like they're all washed up. Of course it was them. Look, imagine you're an alien. You come to Earth, and the first thing you see is Mayan ruins. If you assume humanity is all washed up, you'll miss out on sky cities and the whole bloody colonial network. Okay, relax. It was them. So what do you want to know? I want to know what we will do when we find them. What we'll do? Well, I don't know. Probably try to figure out if they're hostile or not. That seems like a good place to start. We don't want to end up like the cat roasting over their fire. But look, ever think about this? What if they got so advanced that they shed their bodies and turned into machines? That's ridiculous. What's ridiculous about it? I've heard of people doing it, becoming cyborgs or even full robots. We use chips, but some people have changed their brains out for computers. Isn't it the next step? Become a super-intelligent computer capable of terraforming other worlds? Why would machines want to terraform Venus? Machines don't breathe. Okay, good point. Well, why are you trying to terraform Venus if we're all going to be robots one day? Who says we're all going to be robots? I'm not going to be a robot. I guess you don't read science fiction. No, because it's fiction. I prefer facts. All right, fine. Forget the robots. You're probably right. All I'm saying is we don't know what we're going to find out there. That's my whole point. It's hard to plan for something when you don't know what you're planning for. Then we need to think about what we might find. I did. Robots. You didn't like my suggestion. Because it's ridiculous. Now what will we do when we find the advanced civilization of our creatures? They see us. We see them. What's next? Say hi. You said the first thing we should do is make sure they're not hostile. That's probably the only bright idea you've had. Hey, come on now. You also liked my idea about gathering information earlier. How do we determine if they're hostile? We put up our hands. If they shoot, we know they're hostile. You're not taking this seriously. No, I am. It's just that I don't think this is something we can plan for. We have to feel it out. Intuit. Intuit. Yeah, use our intuitions. If it's your intuition, I'm scared. I am 100, and this isn't my first split. And I'm telling you, we can't plan ahead on this one. We just have to work things out as they come. Sounds like an excuse to avoid thinking, which seems to be a theme around here. Okay, let's say we intuit our way through this first contact. What then? Well, if they run a civilization, they'll have a legal code of some sort. They'll have customs and laws. We just have to figure out how to fit into them. What do you mean, fit into them? They'll probably think we're aliens. What are their laws around aliens? How do we fit into their laws? Maybe we don't. Maybe we are outside their laws. Or maybe they'll have a different set of rights for us. Sort of like how animals have different rights from humans. And then, what kind of rights are we talking about? Rights for wild animals? For pets? For food animals? Who's to say they have rights at all? Exactly. I mean, we know nothing. How can we plan when we don't know anything? Do you think we should avoid them altogether? If it's that risky, I don't want to be splayed open in some underground military compound by a proto-human. Yeah, you say, poking the fire. There's a crack and a spark flies out. We should consider that a possibility. Maybe we don't approach them. But we're still gathering information. That's what we're here to do, right? It's my job to make sure you're safe. That's my mission. You have your own mission, but my mission vetoes yours if I feel things are getting too dangerous, okay? Okay, that's fine. She rubs her chin and looks at you from the corner of her eye. You're different than I thought. Oh yeah? How do you mean? I thought you were a clown. I thought you were immature, but it turns out you just might have a head on your shoulders after all. Thanks, I guess. How do you do this? What do you mean? How do you do this for a living? This job is nuts. It's absolutely nuts. How could anyone spend their lives doing this? You poke the fire with your stick and think about what you're going to say. She's probably right. It seems like every time you split a world, you just barely escape with your life. There's the adrenaline of it all, but to be honest, you'd be lying if that was your reason for going. You don't actually enjoy the near misses. You know, you say, I think it's because of this, right now. This is why I go. Here we are. We know something is going to happen. Something amazing or beautiful or terrifying. Something no one has ever seen before. We don't know what it is, but we go anyways. I think it's that moment of cautious expectation right before the event that keeps me coming back. It's like an explorer who sees land on the horizon. Or an astronaut putting a foot on an unexplored planet for the first time. Everything is good in that moment. Everything is in equilibrium. But not after. No, not always. But sometimes. Sometimes it's incredible. What do you think about this time? This time? I think this is the best one yet. This is the first time I have been completely in the dark about what will happen. I mean, I don't have a clue. I know there's something out there, something incredible, but I don't have a clue what it will be. You look up. You see Venus through the canopy, right on the tip of the crescent moon. We're going to get there, you say. We're going to get there somehow. I have no idea how. April smiles and curls up under her blanket. Within moments, she's asleep, the gentle sound of her breathing soft against the violent ambience of the jungle. My God, April says for the 100th time. Everything in the clearing is covered in blood. The insects are feasting. Can we go? Do we have to stay? She's covering her mouth and nose with her hands. We'll go soon, you say. I just want to look around a little more. Well, it's going to attract more than just insects. Let's go. Hold on, you say. Find a bit of skin with a tuft of fur still attached. There are scrape marks on the inside of the skin, as though it were purposefully removed with a knife. This part was obviously cut away, as though with scissors or a sharp blade. Whatever killed this animal, it must have been huge. Can we go now? It might not have been huge. This was a butchering site. You can see where different parts of the animal were removed and butchered in different areas, perhaps by different... Well, we don't know what it is yet, but they were definitely intelligent enough to use tools. Maybe your persimmon rats. You think the persimmon rats did this? It wasn't the creatures that attacked us from the fruit tree. Here, look at this, you say, and pick up a chipped flake of black obsidian. This is part of a handcrafted tool. This chip broke off and they left it. What's that? She says, pointing at the far side of the clearing. There's a vine hanging down from the trees. At the bottom, near the foliage, is what looks like the ripped remnants of the vine net. You pull it out of the foliage. On the jungle floor are what look like small bolts with obsidian barbed hooks and bird's feathers fashioned into the fletchings. These bolts are all broken. You pick one up. You dab the tip of your tongue on the point and feel fire. It's poison. You shiver at the thought of being shot by one of these bolts. Your mind turns to April. Let's get going, you say.
That was Blue Dragons Part 1 by myself, Jordan Harbour. If you enjoyed this show, please support the Twilight Histories by joining us on Patreon. I'm building a multi-part show inspired by D&D and directed entirely by suggestions from our patrons. The story, or campaign, is set in a medieval town in the years following the Black Death. An evil duchess has used her vast inheritance to create a huge labyrinth full of creatures, villains, and death traps. Each year, she offers a reward to anyone who can complete it alive. No one has claimed the reward yet. Will you? Our patrons will be in control of what their character does. At the end of each show, our patrons will find themselves in some kind of peril, and they get to vote how they would like to proceed. Will they fight, or will they run? Will they cross the rickety bridge, or will they take the boat? Will they show kindness to the creature, or will they murder it and steal its treasure? When you join us in Patreon, you will be that hero. It's your adventure, and you get to decide how the story goes. We need your support to keep this show going, and we're going to make joining Patreon a lot of fun. Please join us. You can find a link to Patreon by visiting the website at twilighthistories.com. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. Till next time, take care.